This is the Patriots Catch 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Alex Barth.
I'm Evan Lazar.
Evan Lazar.
Hello, everybody.
Nailed it.
Joined as always by Alex Barth.
That's a bit. That's a match.
No risk it, no risk it.
22.
Here is Evan Lazar and Alex Barth.
Zach Wilson is definitely like the worst person to get stuck playing golf with. You made it 8 episodes before I got into a golf rant, Evan. Good job.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots Catch 22.
You've opened
Lazar,
every show we've done together the same way for 3 years, and it took a golf reference to throw you off of that? Wow.
It definitely did throw me off because, you know, my feelings on golf. You also told me that I had to stay focused on the show because Argentina-Poland is on right behind you. So I'm trying not to watch that right now because I do want to focus on the show. So that's what we're going to do. We are going to preview the Bills here today. That's going to be a big part of the show. But I do want to go back and talk a little bit about the Vikings game, not necessarily get into the nitty-gritty because I think it has been almost a week now and we're kind of on to Buffalo around here, Alex. Yeah. But I do want to talk a little bit about that game as well, and that's where I want to start. And every show I try to come up with my one big thing that I need to get off my chest. What really grinds my gears about
Peter Griffin,
about what's going on, the narratives or the talk.
You know,
around
really grinds
the
my gears.
Thank
yes!
you. Thank you.
Yes.
I knew he had it. And when you come off a game like that in Minnesota last Thursday night, and I'm not saying everybody, and I'm going to not saying anybody in particular.
Yeah.
But when you come off a game like that on Thursday night, I feel like the conversation immediately for the majority goes to the defense getting shredded by Justin Jefferson and the Vikings, the special teams giving up a touchdown and running into the punter, and all of these other factors, right, that go into losing the game, the referees. And I'm not saying that the offense always escapes blame, but I think in this particular instance, I heard a lot of that, right? Like the defense couldn't stop a real offense when they played a real offense. The special teams was terrible. The refs were terrible. And all of that might be true. It probably is true. A lot of it is true. But what I think the biggest problem that I have with and why it gets me agitated is because we look at that and we're trying to take away blame from the offense, right? And I've had some people that sit here and tell me, oh, well, 26 points should be enough to win a game. 26 points probably wins you a lot of games in this league, right? It probably wins you a lot of those games against the Lions or against the Jets with Zach Wilson at quarterback or the Colts with Sam Ehlinger. Like, that's going to win you a lot of football games at 26 points. But when the Patriots play teams like Minnesota on the road on Thanksgiving night, another playoff team, they play Buffalo here tomorrow night, the offense has to be able to win you a game eventually.
Yeah.
Eventually, the offense has to be able to drive the bus because the Patriots, to me right now, Alex, and I think the biggest reason why the Patriots cannot get over the hump of being a 6-5 mediocre average operation is because they can only win games one way. They only have one winning formula. And that is that the defense dominates, they play a clean game across the board, and the offense is allowed to just kind of coast to a victory. And there's never any real pressure on the offense in a fourth quarter or in a big spot. That's how they win football games. When they get into these games where the defense doesn't have its best day, the special teams make some mistakes, there's some adversity for the offense. They do not have the ability yet to rise above it as an offense and lead this team to victory. The Patriots had, I'm taking out the last drive because that last drive to me is garbage time.
Even though it was a one score game, it's essentially garbage time. Yeah.
The three drives that they had in the fourth quarter, they went punt, punt, turnover on downs in the fourth quarter. They gained 58 yards on 13 plays, and 40 of those yards were on a screen pass to Ramondre Stevenson. So that means that the other 12 plays went for 18 yards in that game. And I think we remember a lot in the Brady era about the Patriots' mystique that, oh, they never made mistakes like that, right? Like, oh, they never would run into the punter. Or they would always step out of bounds, Hunter Henry, at the two-minute warning and preserve the clock, right? Like, they always made these, I think, on the whole, they made those decisions way more than maybe they are doing now, right? Like, maybe it was almost a 90% lock that they would do those things. But they didn't always play perfect. They didn't always have perfect games. But they won so many games because, quite frankly, Brady would put the team on his back, right? And Brady would lead them there. And I'm not putting it all on Mac Jones.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is on Mac Jones. And if they are going to compete with Buffalo tomorrow night, and this is sort of why I'm bringing this up and starting here. If they're going to compete with Buffalo tomorrow night, they are going to have to get that performance from Mac Jones. They are not going to hold the Bills offense to 10 points. They are not going to dominate the Bills offense tomorrow night. The Bills offense is going to get theirs, right?
Right.
Maybe they can hope to make it less efficient, right? And maybe there's some turnovers mixed in there or something like that. But the Bills offense, I would say, realistically, is going to get to 27 points. 27 is where they got last week against Detroit, despite having a few snafus, right? Despite having a few turnovers and brain farts in the red zone and things like that, they still got to 27. Can you score 28? Can you score 30, right? Can you outscore them? Because right now, the Patriots have not shown. I'm not going to say they can't do it, because maybe they can in the future. But as of right now, they have shown us that they can't do it.
Well, they just scored 26. So
they're going to need 28.
They're going to need 28. All right, fine. Can they hit another field goal? A couple things about what you just said. We've talked about this before. And I've said that when, you know, we throw these terms around, good team, great team, whatever. A bad team can't win. A good team can win games their way.
Right.
A great team can win games multiple ways.
Right.
Or a great team can win games multiple ways, and an elite team can win games anyway. And I think where the Patriots are right now, they can win games their way. They can win defensive games, right? Low-scoring games. They're trying to get from that good to that great column is kind of essentially what you're saying.
Exactly.
I don't disagree with your overall point on the offense. I don't think it applies to last week a ton, just because yes, they weren't great in the fourth quarter, but man, they gave that. When your defense is built the way it is, that should be enough. The offense doesn't exist in a bubble, right?
I just think
complimentary football,
right?
For the offense to have the performance it had, the defense should be able to clean up. I would come back at you with, you know, where was the turnover late in the game? Where was the pressure on Kirk Cousins? Any of that? When the Patriots have won these kinds of games, the kind of game, even going back to some of the later Brady years, we called Daron Harmon the closer for a reason, right? Because the defense would come up at the end of the game and force that one big turnover that would end it. And that wasn't there. They let the Vikings score 10 points in the fourth quarter and have a big drive late in the game that ran out the clock. I'm not saying the offense was perfect. They weren't. They weren't. But I think your point could be better made about, honestly, even a win, go back to the Jets game, right? That's a game where I'm more like, yeah, they won and it was great, but man, you needed something more from the offense in that one.
I just feel like you can only win a game with your defense right now, right? And this is the big problem to me, is that, you know, you're saying it should have been enough, but on that day, it wasn't enough. Right, so on that particular day, what you are expecting?
But why? But
because
why it's complimentary football? Why wasn't it enough?
Because you are expecting the defense to be not. I won't use the word perfect, but you are expecting the defense to be good every single week. And in this league, you're not going to be good every single week.
The way this defense is playing this year, and I know people point out the good quarterbacks versus the bad quarterbacks, whatever. They should not allow 33 points to Kirk Cousins. That to me is the bigger issue here.
With
the backup left tackle.
I disagree because I just think that some weeks you're just not going to be on your A game. Like, you know, for the Patriots, here's the whole point, right?
And this but is when we say that about the offense, no, the offense is bad.
The offense has been bad all year, right? And the offense, right. At some point, the offense needs to hold its end of the bargain. That's my point.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing is that when you start to, I'm not going to do the whole schedule thing and stuff like that, but when you start to break down how does this Patriots team make the playoffs?
Yeah,
I think they have to get to 10 wins, right? Which means that they have to go 4-2 in the last six games of the season to get to 10 wins. You are not going to win four games out of this six with this schedule on all on the back of your defense. Not in this league. Not in 2022. Not with Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase coming in here in a couple weeks, and Tua and the Dolphins coming in here, and Buffalo coming in here, and then traveling to Buffalo. Like, you're just not going to win the games on the back of the defense without the offense winning or stealing or whatever term you want to use a game every once in a while. And this is, I think, a two-year trend now with the Patriots too. Like, this goes back to Mac's rookie season as well.
Yeah.
And it goes back to 2020 too, but I kind of throw 2020 out. You look at the last 2 years, this is the only way that they win football games. And if you're that one-dimensional, then you're an 8-win team.
Then you're great team.
Right. And in order for them to get where they need to get, in order for me to be totally sold on Mac Jones as the future, like as the franchise quarterback that we all want him to be, I got to see things didn't go well defensively. The special teams made a few mistakes, but it didn't matter because Mac Jones led them to a win. He doesn't have a win like that. He just doesn't.
He should have too. Against Dallas and Tampa last year.
Dallas, to me, too, is the same thing. Dallas, he throws a pick six.
And then he comes back the next play and throws a touchdown.
But if he doesn't throw a pick six, Alex, then they're not in the hole to begin with. The only reason why they're in
then
the
it
hole
all nets
is because
out.
He
then
threw
it
a
all
pick
nets
six.
Out. Then it all nets out.
I still don't think that was, and also, let's not forget they had the possession in overtime where they had the ball. Now
that Nelson Agholor was held.
Sure. He dropped it. And they could have gone for it on fourth down, to be honest, too. I think it was like fourth and three or
fourth and
four. It's
not Mac's fault. It was. You're right.
But they didn't lead the – he had the opportunity to lead the drive in overtime, and they didn't. And again, I'm not just putting it all on Mac. Like, the whole offense, right?
But this is my point. You're saying you want to see this for Mac, and I'm telling you have seen it. This is the whole – this is just one example of the whole conversation that exists around Mac Jones right now. You have seen it. In the sense that Mac has done what you're asking him to do, the ultimate result isn't what you want it to be, but that's due to factors outside of Mac Jones' control.
I guess, man. We just can't keep making these excuses.
You're right. Look, eventually you need to start winning games. You're right. But I've said this before on this show. I'll say it again. Mac Jones is not in the top three lists of reasons Mac Jones has struggled this year.
I don't disagree with that.
Concept applies to what we're talking about here. Again, the Minnesota game, it's funny we're having this argument now. I actually think there is some validity to the argument you're making. I just don't think the Minnesota game is the best example of it.
I think the Minnesota game is the perfect example of it because the defense did not play particularly well. That yes, they probably should have played better against primetime Kirk Cousins. No doubt about it. But they didn't. They also didn't play great in the kicking game.
Let me turn it around on you then. Why is it you need to see Mac play well when the defense doesn't play well? I would argue...
Because I need Mac to pick up the rest of the team.
What I would be more interested in seeing, because this is a defensive-minded team, and even outside of maybe 2 or 3 years...
A defensive-minded team in a league that is all about offense.
Listen, the last 2 or 3 years, or the last 20 years, except for maybe 2 or 3, even when Brady was here, it is a defensive... As long as Bill Belichick is the head coach... This is going to be a defensive-minded football team.
I'm not so sure about that.
I want to be able to see them extend leads. I want to see when the defense is on. Like, look at the Jets game. I want to see them be able to pull away in that kind of game. Not have a 10-point performance come down to the wire.
I've seen that before. Yes, I've seen them pull away from mediocre
teams.
I mean against
a good team.
Okay, I mean, but I just don't think that it's realistic is going to come in here and drop an egg on
it. But it's not
offense.
It's not a Buffalo point. It's just a general point. You want to see Mac Jones play well against a good team.
I want to see Mac Jones win a high-scoring game. He has not won a game where the opposition scored 25 points.
Okay, so here's my point. We're kind of arguing two sides of the same argument, but my bigger point is...
That's the story of our lives.
Right. When is the last time... The Patriots, as a whole, like put Mac Jones aside.
Yes.
When's the last time they played a complete game? Offense, defense, special teams. We walked away from it. All three units. Hey, that went well.
Probably
against
Cleveland.
Not the Jaguars.
Oh, I was going to say Cleveland, so I guess that doesn't count.
Okay. But they've been few and far between the last 3 years.
Because I think that other teams get paid too. and you're just not going to walk all over teams like Buffalo. Like, you're just not going to walk all over teams on the road, Minnesota, on a short week.
You don't need to walk all over them.
That's what you want them to dominate in all three phases. You're not going to do that. You're not there yet.
You can play well in all three phases and not win in a blowout.
Can the quarterback win a game for you? Can he? Can he put the team on his back? He had adversity on Thursday night. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
The special teams gave up a kick return touchdown. Pierre Strong ran into the punter. The defense gave up 26 points. Okay? He had to win a game 36-33, and he came up short.
It's not 2016 anymore. You can win games. You're getting mad at me for being like behind the eight ball and how the NFL works, right? Because quarterback.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. The hot team, the real hot team in the NFL right now, they're talking about them right behind us here on ESPN. It's the San Francisco 49ers. How many of those games has Jimmy Garoppolo really won?
Okay, but the San Francisco 49ers have Debo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle and Kyle Shanahan calling plays.
You're right.
A good defense.
You're right. But all I'm saying is,
I know I'm right. Thank you.
You can win games by just all three units showing up, and it's been
Okay. I agree with you. I agree with your point that they can win games with all three units showing up. You're not going to win every game like that. You're not going to get all three units, a well-oiled machine, special teams play as well, defense, offense.
But that's what
offense,
they did here for so long.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, it's not. Alex, did the defense play well in the second half against Kansas City in the AFC Championship game in 2018? They gave up 30 points.
But you know what?
Do you know who played freaking well? Brady. He put the team on his
and
back.
And what Brady doing that first
third
half?
Down
what he doing that first? But this is the you need all of it. You need all of it. It's
okay.
I'm talking about
and when the defense on Thursday night against the Vikings, when the defense picks off Kirk Cousins in the first half and Jonathan Jones returns it to the 17-yard line,
yeah,
they went
score there.
Backwards.
They need a score there. You're right.
Thank
they
you.
Need a score there. You're right. You're right. But it's just it's more so it's less Mac that I'm frustrated with and more so what's going on in the margins, right? It's the penalties.
My point is that that winning on the margins every time you go out there is hard. Every time you go out on the field, if you can't have
Having
any dumb penalties.
Play well every time you go out there is hard.
I don't want him to play well every time. I want him to play well once.
And he did just play well.
For three quarters. For three quarters, he played well. Okay, I want him to I don't need him to play. I don't need him to win every single game for them. Okay? I don't need him to be Patrick Mahomes, right? Where he goes out there and you win every single game because Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback, right? I don't need that. But every once in a while when the defense is having an off game, right? It's like I'm going to cross sports. If you roll your ace out there in baseball and he gets knocked around a little bit, you're surprised, right? You're like, oh, wow. Like, you know, Justin Verlander gave up five runs this game. That's surprising. That's not Justin Verlander's game, right? We're not used to that. Let's go out there and score six, right? Like, is that – that's what we're getting at here, where that is the – that has eluded this team. That has eluded this team. That when the defense – over the last 2 years, when the defense hasn't carried the team to the winner's circle and – all the stuff on the details and on the margins that everybody talks about, to me, is what you were talking about earlier. That good teams need all that to go right. They need every call. They need not to commit dumb penalties. When they're in the two-minute drill, the quarterback needs to throw the ball away instead of taking a sack to preserve time because they need every second of the game. They need every scoring opportunity to go correctly. And this team is in that position, and that's why last year they were 10-7 beating up on bad teams. This year they're 6-5 beating up on bad teams, is because when the good teams come in here, you need to actually be able to be better than just the, oh, we didn't shoot ourselves in the foot team. Or if you do shoot yourself in the foot, you have to be able to overcome it.
But that's how many teams in the league. That's two or three teams in the league are that good.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true. I think that there are teams. I think that a lot of playoff teams are like that. I think a lot of good playoff teams are like that. And right now, that's what you want to be, right? I'm not asking you to win the Super Bowl.
This year especially, I think it's all about what's going on in the margins. There's a handful of teams, and yes, one of them is coming in in tomorrow. But
this Buffalo team is 8-3.
And they don't play well in the margins at all.
Exactly. The quarterback leads the league in interceptions, and they're still 8-3.
But Mac Jones, isn't Josh Allen. One, because he throws less interceptions, but there's other reasons as well. Mac Jones isn't Josh Allen. So if your big complaint is Mac Jones isn't Josh Allen, I don't know what to tell you then.
No, my big complaint is not that Mac Jones isn't Josh Allen, because Josh Allen, I know you'll have your chance to talk about Josh Allen, but Josh Allen is on a different level, okay? I'm not asking Mac Jones to win every single game. I'm asking him every once in a while when the Belichick stuff doesn't go well, right? When the defense doesn't play well, when they don't play sound or they're undisciplined and they take these dumb penalties and all this stuff doesn't go well. All right. He's got to be able to rise up and help the team, propel the team forward. And on Thursday night, he played lights out, and I'm going to give him some compliments here now because I think he deserves some. He played lights out for three quarters, reading the field, seeing the open guys, coverage manipulation with his eyes, with pump fakes in the pocket, third down, even though they were only 3 for 10. Yeah. I thought he made some good plays on third down as well in the second half, like some really good quarterbacking from Mac Jones in this game. The throw that he made, the two downfield throws, the one to Nelson Agholor between the two safeties, everyone can look at that play and then go watch the play that Josh Allen hit Diggs on to set up the field goal against Detroit. It's the same coverage, it's the same route, and Mac rifles it in there just the same as Josh Allen does, right? Like,
right.
It's a great throw. Though a deep ball to Devontae Parker, great ball. Great ball. And I thought some of his situational stuff was pretty good too, in terms of, you know, more management game, to the sticks types of throws, not necessarily the downfield bombs. Some really, really high level quarterbacking for three quarters, probably in my mind, especially given the spot that you're actually playing a good team on the road. I think that was probably his best three quarters in the NFL.
I did. So I guess here's where we differ, and we're not going to, it just is what it is. We're going to disagree on this.
We are.
You're talking about it like the Patriots made some mistakes that every team makes, and they just couldn't,
Every team gives up 139 and 9 catches to Justin Jefferson. Every team does. Every team does.
But
the Buffalo punt, just did it. They just did it.
I'm talking about the punt return or the kickoff return. Those penalties. Like, it was just... That was a lot. That was not your basic overcome a couple mistakes. The Patriots played horrible situational football in that game. Four defensive penalties, the punt block penalty.
They have you such brainwashed about
this type of stuff.
They
gifted the Vikings two drives. About what?
For 20 years, everybody made such a big deal out of situational football and no penalties and the clean Patriots. They never beat themselves. Do you know what? They had damn good players. And I'm not just talking about Tom Brady, okay? They had damn good players.
Well, you know why?
First ballot Hall of Famer.
You know what's good about a lot of those players? They didn't make those kind of mistakes.
They were also just
unworldly. That's part of what made them good.
I just think that if you are only going to win football games like that, you're not going to get in the playoffs this year. You're not going to get enough wins because for all the other stuff to work out perfectly for you, I just don't think there's enough games on your schedule to win in that formula, right? Like, if that's the formula, it's the defense, it's special teams, it's the offense not beating themselves.
I'm not saying that they're going to go 21-0 doing that, but it's...
I think your ceiling is because they did that last year, right? So your ceiling is 10 wins and out in the wild card round.
But here's the thing. They invest so much in that stuff, right? And look, they had some massive moments last year that killed them in terms of bad situational football and making late mistakes. Like, don't think they were 10-7 because this was all perfect last year. Now suddenly this year it's bad. It wasn't. The ceiling last year could have been higher if they got some of this stuff right. When you invest as much as you do in special teams, when you invest as much as you do time-wise in the little things, which I think is great, you need to get them right, though. You need to get them right.
Yeah. Look, I think that we're both right in a way. But I just, again, I will keep reiterating how it's frustrating to watch a team that can only win one way. And I just think if you're that type of team, it's kind of like your Titans, right? Like, they also are in the same boat.
Right.
Where they have one way they can win.
They were just the number one seed
in the AFC. Where they have one way, and how did it go in the playoffs? They have one way that they can win a football game, right? And in order for this Patriots team to go 4-2 in the last six, which I think is what they need to do to make the playoffs, And then I would also piggyback that on, in order to go on a run, real run in the playoffs, you have to be able to win games multiple ways. And I go back to that 18 run because I think everybody points to 13-3 in the Super Bowl, and Perillo is always on this too. 13-3 in the Super Bowl is how they won. They won because they won in Kansas City, right? Like, that's right. How they won. And so you're going to have different types of games in the playoffs. Some games are going to be 13-3. Some games are going to be shootouts. Some games are going to be somewhere in between, right? Like, that's going to be how you have four games to glory now because only one team gets the bye. And if you're going to get there, you're going to have to be able to play different. You're going to have different fighting styles, right? Like, you have to be able to win fights in different ways.
But again, this isn't. There's not a lot of teams that can do that. I'll say it. Bad teams can't win. Good teams have a way to win. Great teams have multiple ways to win. Elite teams can win anyway. How many teams in the league right now are truly great? How many teams can win a game in multiple ways? Like, it's not a long list.
That's fair.
That's fair.
It's not the longest list ever.
I think, and it's a shorter list this year than it is other years.
I agree with you there.
I think that. And I know that people don't want to hear this, and I feel a little cringy saying it, but I'm going to say it. This is the second year of a rebuild.
That's fair.
Very few teams, if any, are elite. I've said this before. The window.
I don't want them to be elite at everything. I just want them until they win a game.
And look,
until they win a game in the 30s.
Right. As dumb as this sounds, I don't think you need to be elite in the way I'm describing it to win a Super Bowl. Right. You need to be great. I don't think you need to be elite, like, in the sense that if you get the right matchup, you could. Teams can beat teams that are better than them, right? If the matchup works the right way. We see that all the time in the NFL.
Sure.
I just think where they're at, right, like, next year is supposed to be the great year. Year three with the draft pick quarterback is where it's all really supposed to turn on. I guess at this point, I'm not it's concerning, but I'm not overly concerned that they can't win these kinds of games because I think there's still one more year of what should be significant improvement on the way. And again, it goes back to, you know, why can Josh Allen win these games this way when he makes all these mistakes? Because he has a guy like Stephon Diggs who can erase those mistakes in one play, right?
Bills Lions to watch Bills Lions in the morning and then watch the Patriots sputter out offensively in the late game on Thanksgiving was perfect, right? Like, because the Bills in that Lions game got outplayed for like
yeah.
For what 58
but what
minutes?
Was the difference at the end? They Josh Allen and right. Stephon Diggs,
thank
right?
you. Yes.
And look, why the Bengals actually play like kind of sloppy football, but they can overcome it because when Joe Burrow can hit Ja'Marr Chase on a one play touchdown, it increases that margin for error so much
right.
because it extends the game. And we'll talk about this when we get in the game plan. Like, that guy's not here. And Matt can be better on his own, but they don't. Who's the guy that's erasing mistakes here?
Yeah,
right?
No, and that's why I don't want to make this just a Mac thing.
That's pretty much all I'm saying. It's not
right.
Like, because people hear what you're saying and they take it to Mac Jones isn't the guy, right?
Right.
They take it to it's time to go back in the quarterback carousel and back to the draft.
Right.
And,
no.
And let's start talking about like
I'm not
that's
there yet.
All I'm pushing back on because I'm not pushing. I know you know that, but
yes.
I'm pushing back on like. The pick. This is not the team. This is not the core for the next 5-10 years that they're just going to go try to win with. It shouldn't be that they're just going to go try to win with this group. They're projected to have anywhere from $50 to $100 million in salary cap next year. Four top 100
yeah, we'll
picks.
See.
Like, we'll see ultimately what happens. But that's my. It's like there's still. This isn't. There's still room to grow for this offense.
Sure, this team needs to get off the margins.
Right.
They've been on the margins for 3 years, and that's why they've been a 500 football team since Brady left.
Young teams are on the margins. That's what happens.
All right. Let's get to some of these calls, and then I want to get into the Bills. Scott, thanks for hanging on with us. Scott, how you doing? I think we might have lost him. He was on for like an hour. If he wants to call back, Scott, you can call back, and we'll get you on the air. Patty and Agawam, how you doing, Patty?
What's going on, guys?
Hey.
Go a little bit off topic. Is it too early to talk draft?
It's not too early to talk draft, Patty, but I will admit that if we go that direction, then I have another rant that I'm going to end up going on. But go ahead, Patty.
I just wanted to get, because I know Alex flips into a lot of guys. I just wanted to throw three names at you, and they're all skill position guys, so it might be like a little bit fun if he looked up on these guys. But
Bart definitely has.
Guys, Zay Flowers out of Boston College. Second guy, wide receiver Jalen Hyatt out of Tennessee, and the guy that I find pretty intriguing, even though his production wouldn't tell you so, is Darnell Washington out of Georgia, the big tight end. Wanted to see what you guys thought about those guys. And, get what you guys think about it.
Yeah,
we got it, Patty. Thank you so much. Appreciate the call. All right, so Zay Flowers, I've seen a little bit.
Zay Flowers from BC,
a local guy. I want to see how he tests, because his general athletic profile scares me a little bit, right? Like, I don't see an overly explosive, fast, athlete out there. I see a guy that wins a lot of contested
more
catches
quick
and
than
stuff.
Fast.
Yeah, like that guy from Purdue, David Bell, was it?
No, he's faster than David Bell. He's not as big. He more, to me, is kind of like... And, I get obsessed with these players every year.
Yeah.
Kadarius Toney and then Wandale Robinson.
You think he's like that?
He's not quite as fast, but he's maybe more shifty.
Okay.
That's another guy where,
because those guys are explosive, dude.
He's going to need a test really well.
Yeah.
Like you said, to me, it's he reminds me a lot of, and we do this every year, we tier players, right? Like, there's the same mold of players, the first-round guy, second-round guy. Jordan Addison at USC.
Yeah, I like him too.
Right, so Zay Flowers is like, if you don't get Jordan Addison, you want that kind of player. Zay Flowers is probably like fringe
day
top 100.
Guy.
Yeah, Jordan Addison. Yeah. So I like him. The Patriots traditionally aren't very interested in those kinds of guys.
Yeah.
Maybe that changes this year, but we'll see. Jalin Hyatt's a really interesting one because he torched Alabama. I mean, he torched Alabama, so he's getting the thumbs up when Bill goes and asks Saban, what about this guy was the issue? Like,
right,
just a monster day. He reminds me of Tyquan a little bit. Fast guy.
That's my fear with him.
He's big, not huge, but he's big.
Yeah.
He can move. He's a little bit, he's a junior, but he's going to be 22 by the time next season starts. It's another guy where, like, if he runs a 4.4, he's probably like a fringe top 100 pick.
Yeah.
If he can get like a high 4.2, low 4.3, he maybe starts to push his stock a little bit. The Patriots obviously like guys like him. They just took Tyquan. And this is, by the way, all very preliminary. I haven't done a super deep dive. It's just the initial read. But I don't, like, it'd feel a little redundant. Now, they've made such picks before. They drafted Anthony Jennings and Ronnie Perkins in back-to-back years, similar players. So that doesn't rule it out. But Jalin Hyatt, Tennessee, certainly a name for Patriots fans to know. Now, Darnell Washington, the tight end out of Georgia, he loses a lot of attention. They have two tight ends who are going to be first-round picks. There's Brock Bowers, but he's not draft eligible yet. He's a true sophomore. Darnell Washington's number zero if you're watching the games. 6'8", 265, and he can move. Up until this point, they really only used him as a blocker. They've started using him as a receiver this year, and he's been pretty good. Now, there's a lot of good receivers on Georgia. He's not getting a ton of coverage attention, obviously, but he's one of those guys. Well, he has 25 catches for 403 yards. He's one of those guys that you watch him move and you don't understand how a guy that big moves that well. Really, when I watch him, I'm not sure how much of, like, he's never going to be like an explosive down the field threat. But, Evan, we've talked a lot about the red zone with this team.
Yeah.
And this is a guy at 6'8 that you can run scheme touch plays with. Kind of, he's almost like a hybrid fullback.
Right, I just don't know where the room on the roster is for another tight end, because Johnny Smith is going to be here whether like it or not.
That's what I was building to, is if Johnny Smith, and to me, he's more of a Johnny Smith comp than a Hunter Henry comp.
Yeah.
Also, he's projected to be a borderline first round pick right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know that they're investing that, but if Johnny Smith is in the last year of his deal, it'd be all over this. He's a great football player, and at the end of the day, I say this all the time, at the end of the day, the draft's about adding talented football players to your roster.
Right.
But, yeah, it's really hard to see where he fits given – right, if you take him in the fifth round and you sit him for a year and then those tight end contracts are up, perfect. And there's guys like that. Who's that called? Patty?
Yes.
Patty, keep an eye out for Luke Schoonmaker from Michigan, or Cameron Lott from Alabama. Those are similar players you can get later, sit, and then they come in year two. Where you're going to have to draft Darnell Washington – he needs to play year one.
I like Hyatt a lot from Tennessee. I think he's a good player, but I worry about usage with him. Who's their offensive coordinator? Because the coach is a defensive guy, right? He's a Saban guy.
Josh Heupel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me pull it up real quick.
Their offensive coordinator, he's got it going on. That guy knows what he's doing, and he gets Hyatt a lot of free releases, stacks, bunches, things like that, and they get a lot of free release so that he can – use that speed right down the field. So,
so the other thing that's going to be interesting about all the Tennessee guys we talk about, and I know you want to move on, I'll leave you with this now.
Yes.
And I'll find out who the offense coordinator is. A guy named Alec Golish. He's in his second year. Spent a lot of time at Illinois. So there you go. The one thing about Tennessee, you talk about this a lot with Ohio State. The offense they run is so different.
It's very unique.
And
yes.
I think Tennessee,
that's sort of what I was getting at.
I think Tennessee's offense actually will be in the NFL. I think that that's a development. That's one of those like RPOs, right?
Right.
The way they really, and when I say spread the field, I mean there's guys on each sideline.
Yeah.
They make you defend every blade of grass east to west. That's coming to the NFL. Like, that's something NFL teams are going to use.
It has some air raid elements to it.
It does. But right now, that's a pretty stark adjustment.
All right. Sean in Vancouver. Sean, thanks for hanging on. How you doing?
Good. You know, I don't have any expectations, or I haven't had any expectations for the Patriots to beat the Bills, make the playoffs this year. I'm looking for growth, and there's like three specific things that I'd like to add. I like the way the offense has improved last week especially. I'd like them to add a couple things like Tyquan Thornton, maybe put him in motion, let him try and build with his team, and also score a touchdown in the red zone on offense. That's what I'm looking for. We saw Marcus Jones replace Miles Bryant, returning kicks and punts. I'd like to see him replace him on defense as well, see him do some of the nickel coverage, especially with McKenzie coming up.
Yeah, it's a good point, Sean, and one we were going to get to here, thanks for the call, on Buffalo, is how they match up and how they're going to match up defensively. The first point, quickly, I think the red zone conversation is interesting and how they get things going there. I wish I could sit here and say, like, this is the problem with their red zone offense, right? But it's really a collection of several different things that are happening, and each individual sequence or individual play kind of has its own issues, right? Like, it's kind of hard to just pick them out. I think protection has hurt them in third down situations where they haven't really held up on deeper third downs in the red zone, so that Mac really has a chance to throw the football down the field in those spots. And play calling, I think, is also rears its head, and maybe even play design in general, just having unique designs down in the red area has kind of eluded them as well. But to get to Buffalo, because I really do want to talk.
Well, can I make one point on the red zone real quick? Because this is something I've noticed really going back to 2020 in the Cam Newton year. As much as we talk about them struggling in the red zone, and they do, they're actually pretty good, like, inside the three.
Yeah.
If they can get the ball inside the three, I guess Damian Harris is hurt, but Ramondre or whoever, going back to 2020 with Cam, they can just pound the ball in the end zone. Like, they're pretty good at that.
Unless they run it out of shotgun for no
Unless
reason.
They run out of shotgun.
Yeah.
The issue has been getting the ball inside the three, and it's almost to the point where I watch them, and again, this goes back to last year, how many times have they thrown the ball just into the end zone? How many times has the ball in the air crossed the goal line? It almost feels like they're in their own heads about it, where, all right, we know we can score from inside the three, so let's just focus on getting inside the three and then go from there.
Right.
And it's almost compounding the issue, right? It's making it worse. They seem, right, because the issue isn't from the five and in. It's from, like, the five to, like, the 25.
Right.
So I just, I want to see them be more aggressive. I think that's the issue. They're trying to do it so incrementally in the red zone. All right, we're going to get from the 20 to the 15, from the 15 to the 10, the 10 to the 5 to the 3, and then HB dive and we score.
Right.
Just throw the ball in the end zone from the 15-yard line.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is the biggest thing, where attack from the high red zone and don't even worry. If you get down to the one, great, awesome. The plan should just be get the ball in the end zone.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. I think a lot of the good offense, I hate to keep phrasing it like that, but a lot of the elite offenses that you see around the league attack the end zone from either the fringe red zone or the high red zone more than anything else, right? There, if you look at a lot of these offenses,
well, look at the Bills. The Bills suck in the red zone, so they've decided to just skip it. The 25,
right? And that's exactly what Bill Belichick said at the podium yesterday, when you, or maybe it was on Monday or Sunday or what.
Days of the week are not real anymore.
Whatever day it was. If we can skip the red zone like we did a few times against Minnesota, then that's good too, right? And I think that that's where we're at with them as well, is shot plays from the high red zone or the fringe red zone, whatever frame terms you want to use. Like, those, I think, need to become their best friends. All right, Eldred, what's going on?
Hey, Evan, everybody. How y'all doing?
Hey.
Good,
hey,
how are you?
Evan.
Yes, sir.
Earlier you said about flooding the zone against Buffalo.
Yes.
Full safety. So I was wondering, who do you take off the field? You know, if you use the four safeties, five corners, or three, or whatever, three corners, two linebackers, who you take off the field?
Yeah, good question. Thanks for asking, because we keep on trying to talk about Buffalo. We keep getting away from Buffalo. So this is my thing with this game with the Bills, my big thing with the Bills, and it starts on defense, and I think it also pertains a lot to the offense too. Clearly what you did in the two games last year to the end of last year, which were the win game, you got to throw out. Like, the win game doesn't count. The two games that counted were the game the day after Christmas and maybe a little bit the playoff game. But really, the game that I focus on is the middle one.
One is the one, because remember, in the playoffs, I mean, Devontae Bosby's out there.
Yeah, in that game too. You were happy to be there. They were focused to try to go on a run, and it looked like two teams that were in totally different mindsets going into that game. I felt it. I think I texted you about it from the press box, and I could feel the energy on the Buffalo sideline, and their warm-up was just so different than the Patriots' energy and focus. So let's go. I want to go off the Week 16 game last year, because to me, that's the game, right? Yeah. That's the game that this game is going to most mimic, I guess is the way to put it.
Sure.
In that game, what got you beat is that you just played your brand of defense, right? Like, you played your early down zone stuff, and then you played man on third down, and they killed you in man coverage. Isaiah McKenzie versus Miles Bryant, JC versus Stephon Diggs. It wasn't a fair fight, right? They just killed you in those situations. I think this is a big Belichick game to me, because
of course,
for 20 years, we talked earlier about all the other stuff that bugs me, right, about the Belichick mystique. But the one thing that's been absolutely true is that for 20 years in big games, Bill Belichick has always had something up his sleeve. He's always had a creative plan. And I go back to the 18 run, because I think it's a good one. In the 18 AFC Championship game against Kansas City, they were 80% man coverage.
Yeah.
They played man coverage the whole game. And then they go to the Super Bowl and they played nothing but zone coverage against the Rams, right? Like, those types of week-to-week game plan type of teams. This Patriots defense, I think, has the talent and the depth to be that. Like, I think they can go week-to-week and change it up if they have to. They've also had an entire offseason to get ready for this game. Like, everything you did in the offseason, both from, like, you know, coaching and kind of going over yourself and scouting yourself and figuring out how to get better and all that kind of stuff from a coaching perspective. And although it might not be these splash moves, I think from a personnel perspective, the Mac Wilsons of the world, the Jabril Peppers, like, those guys are the two young corners, the rookie corners. Those guys were here because that's where you were deficient against Buffalo. You didn't have enough speed at linebacker. Your corners were getting beat in man coverage, so you went out and you got different guys, right? So in this game, I want to see one of those Belichick game plans that film nerds like me on Friday break down and are like, look at what Bill did against Josh Allen. Like, this is incredible, right? And to put my Bill hat on for a second and think really outside the box and away from their typical structure, a four safety dime package is sort of what I've landed on, right? Okay. So I think you got to get the safeties on the field, because those guys can cover and they can obviously tackle. And that's the biggest thing, is tackling. And if you're going to play four safety, to Eldred's point, okay, who are you taking off the field? So I would play four safety dime, which means you only have two true corners on the field. So your corners are probably going to be Jonathan Jones and Jalen Mills.
Yep.
So that means that the guy coming off the field, surprise, surprise, is Miles Bryant. Right. And I would roll those four safeties and I would play all different types of zone against him. Right. Like, I would really spin the dial of zone coverages, play some three, play some four, play some two, maybe play some six. Like, it just completely try to blur those zone lines completely. But most of the time I would try to keep two safeties up. Right. Because you don't want to get the big plays. If I'm the Patriots, if Buffalo runs the football, like, every single Devin Singletary handoff to me is a victory, right? Like, if you, like, go ahead. It's kind of like how they used to play Peyton Manning, right? Like, if you want to hand it off to Knowshon Moreno 40 times in this game, go for it. Go right ahead. So that's how I feel about them defensively. you look at the Buffalo stats, and as you would probably expect, if you play post safety, like if you play 1-3 against them, one is obviously man, forget it. Like, you know, like it's just, it's a death sentence. And that's exactly what they did last year. Now, the other big part of my master plan here, you got to pass rush, right? And I'm not talking about the mush rush, like trash compactor, like push the pocket and contain. Right. No. You have to get after Josh Allen. Like, I want to see Matthew Judon and Dietrich Wise and Josh Uche pin their ears back and pressure Josh Allen, because I think the two biggest things that kill you with Josh Allen, I think the biggest thing that kills you, honestly, is one thing, and that is when he's able to hold the football and just turn it into a playground game, right? Like, he's so good on extended plays. He's so good with his legs. He's so good outside the pocket. So what I want to try to make him do is make decisions. Whether he's throwing or he's taking off, just decide to do something. Like, don't let him just sit there and dictate the terms of the game. You have to force him into things. And that's why I think zone would help, because if he takes off, then fine. Then you just come up, you rally to the football, and you make the tackle. So that's number one. Number two, if they want to play some man, which I'm sure they will, Mac Wilson, or if it's Jabril, maybe it's Jabril, but I think it will end up probably being Mac Wilson just because of the size of Josh Allen. I think asking Jabril Peppers to tackle Josh Allen one-on-one is a tall task for a 220-pound safety. So maybe it's Mac Wilson, but I think you got to have a dedicated spy. I do.
Yeah, so I have some similar thoughts. I actually disagree with some of that. The biggest thing is you can't, like you said, the Bills are going to get theirs, right? You're not going to win every play.
That's why
Josh
I want them
Allen.
To be aggressive, because maybe you will make some plays that way, right? Like, they might make some plays too, but at least you will make some plays.
So here's the thing about the Bills. The Bills are a globetrotter offense. And
here comes his spiel about the Bills and how they're overrated.
No,
there you
go. People mistake overrated.
Go. Come on, just do it.
People mistake this for calling them overrated. It's wild. They're not perfect. The Bills aren't perfect. There, I said it. Okay? The Bills are not a perfect football team.
What are you talking about?
Are the Bills very good? Yes, they're not new. There's been teams like this before.
Okay, what's your point?
Here's my point. The Bills are going to get theirs, right? Yes. If you try to pick apart every single little play, what the Bills want to do, they want to score quickly. They want to be on and off the field. One play, 80 yards, Stephon Diggs, it's over. That's all they want to do. And they're very good at it. And when you let them do it, they will kill you. You have to take that away. You have to make them methodically march their way down the field. There's two reasons for that. One, they turn the ball over a lot. It's not just Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Those receivers fumble. They turn the ball over a lot. At some point, they're going to give one to you, and the Patriots have to capitalize.
But that's what they tried to do last year.
That's not it.
All right.
The other thing is, they're not good in the red zone. They struggle because, again, they want that deep shot, and the deep shot's not there in the red zone. It's almost a twofold thing. Something you said that I agree with is huge is if they're running the ball, you win. I think that even applies to Josh Allen scrambling inside the 20s.
Me too.
Inside the 20s.
I think people way overreact to him scrambling.
I agree with you. I would just don't give him that deep shot. If he's going to run for 15 yards from the 45 to the 30, happened. Oh, well, so be it. That's a win.
Yeah.
But the thing you have to do is once you get in the red zone, that mentality flips. Josh Allen's turnover to interception ratio or touchdown to interception ratio in the red zone is almost 1-1. It's 8-7. Once you get in the red zone, then it becomes about making him throw the football because he can't or he struggles throwing the football in those tight windows.
As good as Josh Allen is, and then he can finish, he is, as a runner, as good as he is, he's averaging 6.9 yards a carry, which leads the league.
Yeah.
He's a quarterback. Sure. So he's averaging 7.9 yards per pass attempt. So it's still better to have him run, right?
But except in the red zone.
Yes.
Except in why it almost has to. You almost just hold on for dear life until you get down into the red zone. And if he
that's
turns,
what they tried last year.
But here's the thing. When these teams step up and try to fight aggressive with aggressive, they get in. Your whole plan is predicated on the idea they can cover Stephon Diggs. Obviously, the last couple years, they couldn't do that. Now, this is where it's really interesting. Stephon Diggs had J.C. Jackson's number. He just did.
Yeah.
You see that with matchups sometimes. Like Devontae Parker had prime Stephon Gilmore's number.
Right.
Remember Malcolm Butler used to lock up prime Antonio Brown like every time they played. It was just one of those matchups that J.C. Jackson didn't have it. Jonathan Jones may or may not. We don't know. But
I think he matches up better, honestly.
I think he does too. We'll see. Quickness, I agree with you.
He can
mirror
the quickness. Yeah.
Josh Allen's passer rate and the run element is totally a factor here, but let's just take him as a passer for a second. Josh Allen's passer rating when he throws to Stephon Diggs is 121.5.
Yeah.
That's astronomical. That's massive. Josh Allen's passer rating throwing to everybody else is 89. That's pedestrian. It's not as stark as Kirk Cousins throwing to Justin Jefferson versus everybody else, but in the big thing of his 11 interceptions, 10 have been targeting players other than Stephon Diggs.
Okay.
So
good stats.
Your plan works as long as they can take Stephon Diggs away. But
right. Well, that's why I got a guy underneath him and a guy over the top.
But here's
the
thing. They had that on Justin Jefferson last week, and it didn't work every time.
They played a lot of man, though.
I just think
play man.
Your plan works is a big picture thing, but they're going to get theirs. There's going to be certain drives where you just have to don't let the big play beat you. Hold on for dear life. Get down into the red zone and then make Josh Allen throw the ball in the red zone.
I would be with you 100%. And the big play thing is obvious, right? Like you can't give up the big plays 100%. But I think that, and Bill said this yesterday about sitting there and watching him throw.
Right.
That to me is what that is a little bit too much, right? If you're just trying to get him to make mistakes
So let me just say this.
I think you're going to be sad. Because I don't think he's going to make as many as you want him to.
I'm still I wouldn't be so sure of that. He leads
not
the league
in
interceptions.
You. Not against you. I think against other teams, he's had some brain farts. For some reason, he's got your number right now.
And that's fair. I'm talking about the coverage.
Yeah.
Your thing about the pass rush and go get him is true. You got to hit him. You got to make him uncomfortable in the pocket.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, If you're going to rush that aggressively and you're going to try to jump routes and things like that, all he's going to do is throw it over the top to Stephon Diggs.
No, I don't want to jump routes. I want to play really sound two deep zone.
So here's my question for you.
Because
you say I'm mimicking the plan from last year. What I'm saying mimics the plan from last year.
A little bit.
Did the plan from last year not work because it was a bad plan, or did it not work because they didn't execute it well?
It didn't work because he had all freaking day to throw the football.
So answer my question. Did it not work because it was a bad plan, or did it not work because they didn't execute it correctly?
I don't know if the back end was necessarily a bad plan. The rush was a bad plan.
So this is basically what I'm saying. I'm talking about the coverage.
Yeah.
I
also think that leaving Isaiah McKenzie, Miles Brown,
that was
Isaiah
its own
McKenzie
thing. That was bad. When they drafted Marcus Jones.
That was borderline.
That was going to be my last point.
Yes.
All of this is right. Get on Josh Allen, make him uncomfortable, take away the deep shot. That all works as long as he doesn't have the same option open repeatedly in the short and intermediate area of the field.
Yeah.
Miles Bryant struggled at the beginning of this season. He's had a good couple of months. But I learned one thing from those matchups last year, is that he does not have the foot speed to keep up with Isaiah McKenzie. They turned it into a foot race. It wasn't this complicated scheme or anything like that.
That's why I'm taking
one
him
guy
off the field.
Was faster than the other guy.
Not your game, Miles.
When they drafted Marcus Jones, Evan,
is he
my
ready?
First thought.
Me too, but is he ready?
He's shown me enough that I'm willing to try it out and find out.
My fear is that they won't get there until Isaiah McKenzie has already beat that drum like six times, right? I think he's going to
have. That's fair.
Yeah.
And look, they didn't adjust out of it last year. Now, the personnel made it difficult to adjust last
year. They didn't have these options.
So many guys were hurt.
That's why I like their chances better this time.
Marcus Jones has played 67 coverage snaps this year. He's been targeted six times. He's allowed a catch on two of those.
Yeah, no, he's been fine.
Here's the Bills are better than the Patriots. There, I said it. The Bills are better than the Patriots. you're gonna have to take some risks to win this game. Would you disagree with that? If you're the Patriots, you're gonna have to take some risks to win this game.
That's sort of my point. Right?
Seeing if Marcus Jones can cover Isaiah McKenzie is a risk. I think it's a good risk to take as long as you're willing to adjust out of it if it doesn't work. But like, that's something to start the game. I want to see that because I think he might be up to it. And if he is up to it, it changes the dynamic.
So I think we agree more than we disagree. But I think the biggest thing to me is that
I think you're just scared of Josh Allen.
I'm not afraid of Josh Allen as much as I am afraid of Josh, the way that they played him last year allowed Josh Allen's raw talent to take over the game. And that's what
right.
that's what he is.
You can't do.
Right. So to me, what I think they need to do, and this is why I got into some of the pressure stuff, which I think is key. So I would call them like fire zones, right? Blitz zone.
Right.
Because I think to me, what you need to do is make him beat you in structure.
Yes.
Right, like when he has to hit the top of the drop and make a decision with the football, and because he's got a guy, you know, pressure coming at him, and he's got to throw the football, and he's not running around, and he's not standing back there for six, you know, hours every single time he drops back to pass. Like you need the if they can get him to make the majority of his throws in that 2.5 to 3 second range,
right,
then I think they have a really good chance to hold up in structure.
And I guess what I'm saying is I think, and again, we're just talking about that matchup here last year because the playoff game was different. So many guys were hurt. I think they were maybe closer to that last year than people realized, but because Isaiah McKenzie was so constantly open as a quick outlet, the rest of it just didn't show up. And that's not to excuse it. Again, you have to cover Isaiah McKenzie this time. You just have to. But that was the game that Stephon Diggs had the least impact. They were able to take him away. And there were a couple of moments in that game where Josh Allen panicked. Remember, he threw one right to J.C. Jackson at the end of that game in a 5-point game that might have turned it.
Yes.
But for every time he was panicked, there were five times where he had that safety outlet and Isaiah McKenzie with nobody near him.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Marcus Jones is blanking Isaiah McKenzie, but can he at least force Josh Allen to fit the ball into a window?
He's got enough foot speed to keep up with him. We know he can run with
him. That's the thing. Some of those throws to Isaiah McKenzie, again, this is where I get criticized for being too harsh, but it's right. Go back and watch it. Some of those throws Isaiah McKenzie had to go get. They weren't horrible throws, but they weren't necessarily right between the numbers.
He made one throw on a crossing route.
Just one nice throw, yes.
One nice throw.
No, some of those, you remember McKenzie had to go up on the jump ball? There was one he had like
a couple, but Isaiah McKenzie's also like 5'7", so a jump ball for him is, you know, not necessarily a jump ball for everybody.
My point is, you're
speaking as a guy that is not very tall, by the way. I'm not taking any shots.
You're talking about forcing Josh Allen to play in structure.
Yes.
Isn't part of that forcing him to fit the ball into windows?
Yeah.
They didn't do that last year. How often last year when he's throwing it to Isaiah McKenzie did he have to fit the ball into a window?
That's fair. I also think you can bait him, right? Like, I think that some of the interceptions that I've seen on his tape recently are because he's so damn greedy. Like, he thinks that there's not a single throw on the planet that he can't make.
He's a don't-think-react quarterback.
He just thinks that his arm strength is going to get the ball into every window.
Right.
Right? So there's instances there where if you can close those zone gaps, then you can get some plays on the ball. All right.
Right.
We got two more callers, and then we got to wrap it up.
All right,
Spee, let's go. 12 rounds. What do you
this
got?
Great. You guys are killing it today. This is an excellent discussion. I love Miles Bryant on the bench, and you know, big
sorry, Miles.
Usage wise, that'd be great. No, it's awesome analysis all around. I wanted to get back to stuff that you guys were talking about earlier because I was oddly kind of agreeing with everything that Evan was saying and kind of disagreeing with Alex, all pretty
good
much across the board. But I was thinking about, you know, Alex, your net neutral idea.
Yeah.
And I wanted, and this is just better suited for this show than Patriots Unfiltered because it's kind of a data-driven thing. Like, a while ago, I went back and looked on Over the Cap for just at cap costs and cash costs for all the quarterbacks since 1991 through 2021. And if there's just an overwhelming theme when you look at all these. So, like, you have to have, for the Super Bowl winning team is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't clear.
Okay.
But basically, you need to have a quarterback who's either Hall of Famer or borderline Hall of Famer on a team-friendly deal. So, like, only 23% of those quarterbacks, Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, were top five in the league in cap, and only 32% were top five in cash. So I just think that this kind of harkens back to your discussion earlier today with Evan, where I think Evan was just completely right. Like, you look at a Mac Jones, you need him to be somebody who's going to pull the team up by the bootstraps in the fourth quarter at some point. To win it all, you need a quarterback who can do that.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here, Spee. I think that that's – I think where Alex and I – or maybe I didn't explain myself or articulate myself as the best is I'm not expecting him to do that every game.
Right.
But when things go poorly like they did on Thanksgiving night for the defense and for the special teams, the fact that game – is like almost like an automatic L at that point. If we tell you that that's exactly how the game is going to play out, that the defense is not going to play very well, Justin Jefferson's going to go for 9 for 139 and a touch, and special teams is going to give up a touchdown, then we all could have written the story before the game even started,
right,
and say that they're going to lose. And that's the part that gets.
To the point you're making, and I know this sounds like a cop out, but averages don't mean anything to the individual, right? Most of those quarterbacks, like you said, so I don't know what you defined as a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, but a lot of, you know, Hall of Fame caliber quarterback on a team friendly deal, there's been expensive quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls. There's been non Hall of Fame quarterbacks that have won.
I'm
Super
telling
Bowls.
You that most of the times they are not as expensive as the other top quarterback in the league.
So you're saying it's more about contract than ability, which would back
because
my point
think
up.
About the Brady model. Think about the Brady right. model, right? Like, and that basically, even though Brady is special and is a unicorn, that model does generalize back to 1991.
Right. So you're agreeing with you, but that agrees with my point. That makes my point.
Except that it's not, these are not net neutral quarterbacks. They're good. They're like Hall of Fame or Hall of Fame caliber quarterbacks who have basically allowed enough money to be spent elsewhere to be able to shore up. Enough
but so
of a,
so
a good,
okay.
A,
so here's
a
my point. So. This is where we diverge. I'm throwing my idea out as the way the league is trending, not the way it's gone. There's no such thing as
one. Give me one data point. Give me one data point with the league trending that way when zero quarterbacks who fit that description have won a title.
Well, because it's trending that way, it hasn't happened yet. Here's what I would say. All right. Here's what I would tell you. The concept of a good, affordable quarterback doesn't exist anymore. Every single deal these quarterbacks sign breaks some sort of record. It wasn't like that for a while. It's been that way the last 3, 4, 5 years, right? The quarterback you're describing, the only way to get that quarterback now is going to be through the draft, right? So that, in essence, sort of...
We're just discounting Matt Stafford, right?
Is Matt Stafford special?
Yeah, like, I wouldn't put him in that. You're talking about Hall of Fame caliber quarterbacks. He led the league in picks last year.
I think Matt Stafford's a great example, honestly.
Of what? Of my point?
Yeah, because
yeah.
He won a title for a team that didn't draft.
He won a title for a team that was stacked.
Right, but he was affordable.
He was affordable.
So, all right. So, I'm not saying it's right.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm
saying that he's a good. No, I don't know.
When did he sign that deal?
He's a Hall of Famer, maybe because of his inflated numbers.
It wasn't prime Matthew Stafford in 2021. No, my point is getting an afford. Like you can't draft a quarterback, develop him, and then sign him. Like if you have a good quarterback, you can't afford all the other bells and whistles in the modern NFL.
I got this. I mean, this is Bill Barnwell wrote a column about this like a few years ago, and that's where the thought kind of first occurred. To me, and that's what I did this analysis. But I'm trying to find the middle ground between your take and the empirical reality of the quality of these quarterbacks who are winning everything. They're just, and maybe you're saying things have shifted in recent history. And
I'm saying they're shifting in that direction. This theory doesn't apply to 1991, to 2001, even to 2011. This is a very recent. You know, it's really only been the last 2 or 3 years you've seen teams go like, all right. Penei Sewell and J.C. Horn being drafted ahead of Justin Fields doesn't happen 3 or 4 years ago. Even as recently as 3, 4, 5 years ago, that doesn't happen. That's a relatively new phenomenon.
I think this part of the disconnect in our discussion about this is that I think you're kind of talking about getting to the OK Bowl, and I'm talking about winning the Super Bowl. Like, and maybe that's just too stringent a criterion or something.
But you...
I think all Alex's point is, and I agree with most of it, is that there is a path to winning a Super Bowl without having Patrick Mahomes on your roster.
Right. So right? Here's what kills me. If the Niners had won in 2019, I'm a genius. But they didn't lose because of poor roster construction. They lost because their coach blew the game.
They also
throwing
lost
the ball in the fourth
Jimmy
quarter.
Garoppolo
missed
a touchdown.
Why were they throwing the ball with Jimmy Garoppolo?
He was wide open.
It could have run out the clock.
That's the point. Why were they throwing the ball? Sorry, Matt. Garoppolo? You have a quarterback who can't make that throw. That's part of the problem.
He was wide open.
They didn't need to throw. It's not like they were down two
We've
scores
argued
and
about
Jimmy
this
Garoppolo
since
couldn't lead them back. It's not like they were down
I
two
know
scores.
What we're yelling about.
It's not like they were down two scores and Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't lead them back. Okay.
Oh, man.
This is good stuff.
Speed, we really appreciate the call, man. Anytime you want to call in, the floor is yours to argue with Alex, which I really appreciate. And then he always brings up 2019 Jimmy Garoppolo and ignores the
Kyle
fact
Shanahan for that forever.
Ignores the fact that he missed a wide open touchdown.
They didn't need to throw the ball. They didn't need to throw
the
ball.
Ben in Maryland, wrap us up here, Ben. What do you got?
Hey, y'all. This has been my favorite podcast episode yet, I have to say.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I have to say, though, I've agreed with Alex most of the show.
Darn it.
But anyway, rewatching the All-22 from last year, it felt like the Patriots really, like, never blitzed Allen and let Allen, you know, extend plays on third down, fourth down, all that stuff. So I want the Patriots to blitz a lot tomorrow, bring in Judon, Wise, all of that. And also wondering if you just assign a player like, you know, Mac Wilson to follow him all night, quarterback spy kind of thing. But, yeah, that's it.
Yes, love it. Love it. Yeah. Love it, Ben. That's, I think, exactly what we were trying to get to. Thanks for the call. Is that put some pressure on him, dial up some blitzes. When you do play man coverage, then a guy like Mac Wilson's the perfect spy, right? And I think what's cool about some of the things that they do, I got into this rabbit hole when I was writing up my game preview. I didn't fully go there because the Patriots don't do a ton of it. But Georgia and the Saban tree runs this front called Odd Mirror, which is a three down front. And there's a fourth guy who's kind of like a free player.
Yeah.
And basically the whole design of the front, again, it's called Odd Mirror, is that those three guys are let loose. Like, they have the freedom to just beat the guy in front of them. Just do whatever you want. Don't worry about rush lane integrity. Don't worry about the mobile quarterback. Just go get the QB. And then that fourth guy, who's usually standing up on the line of scrimmage, is the spy, right? So what they do that really, really well is they funnel the quarterback in one direction so that the spy is not trying to spy him from sideline to sideline, but instead he has an idea of where exactly they're leading the quarterback to. So, for example, if like they want to let Judon, you know, just loose on the edge, like maybe it's like, okay, I'm going to rush him from the backside on the left tackle who happens to be a backup because Deion Dawkins isn't playing in this game. So Mac Wilson, you know that non-arm side is where Josh Allen's going to escape the pocket from, which is what you want to do anyways.
And I think Mac Wilson played that role, the linebacker role, the non-rusher role at Alabama. That makes a lot of sense.
The key to it, though, is as much as you're letting the rushers free, they have to still rush within that structure, right?
Yeah, I would also say Alabama in recent years has struggled against mobile quarterbacks like the Patriots have. You know,
they have.
You saw what Hendon Hooker did to them extending plays a couple weeks ago. So, you know, against the guy.
I believe this is more of a Kirby thing. Like, I think this is more of a Georgia.
That would make sense, yeah. No, I know Alabama runs it, but I think Georgia does it more than Alabama.
Maybe
does
Georgia
now.
Does it better.
well, I mean, you look at who they had, like some of the guys they've had the last couple of years. I mean,
Quay Walker and N'Kobe Dean.
Quay Walker and N'Kobe Dean with those guys they've had up front. Jordan Davis, like, come on, get out of here. They've had just unbelievable talent up front.
All right. We didn't touch too much on the offense.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
I have one point on the offense, and I pretty much make this point every time the Patriots play a high-flying offense on the other side. I talked about it before they played the Bucs last year, the Cowboys. The biggest thing the Patriots offense can do in this game, other than score points, I know you want them to score points.
Really?
Is shorten the game. Shorten the game.
Oh, you're going old school on me.
Keep the clock, but it works, Evan. It works. Keep the clock running. Limit the number of plays. Limit the number of drives. Because we've talked a lot about the Bills' margin for error.
Yes.
They turn the ball over a lot, but they can make up for it. The way to shrink that margin for error, you look at where they've won a lot of these games the last couple of weeks. They've won it. People say, oh, they're winning games in the fourth quarter. No, they're winning. Well, they are, but they're winning games on the 10th, 11th, 12th drive of the game. If you keep that clock running, it might be the fourth quarter, but that 10th drive's not going to come, right? Last year against Tampa, I said they have to keep Tampa to under eight drives or eight or under drives. Tampa scored a game-winning touchdown on the 9th drive of the game. Now, shortening the game, that means ball control.
Ugh.
It means converting third downs. Ugh. It means extending drives. These are things that the Patriots, they're you know, third down percentage, average drive length, average drive time, average drives per game. They're in the bottom 10, you know, bottom third of the league and all of that.
So this is really not spelling well for them to this win is like
all,
this.
Well, here's the thing. We're just talking about what they need to do. It's all much easier said than done. But if they can find some sort of rhythm offensively where they keep it moving, that's how they're going to win this game. Can I give you the one sliver of hope on this? I know you say they're not great with this.
Hopeful. Yeah.
The Bills are one of the worst teams in the league at covering tight ends. And it's been an especially a big problem for them since Micah Hyde went on IR,
right,
as you would expect. Great way to extend a game is run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. When they come up to take that away, go play action, throw it to the tight end. I know this is something we've called for 2 years and hasn't happened.
Ugh.
But if there was ever a time to do it, and the kicker, the Bills are also one of the worst tackling teams in the league. They don't tackle well in the open field.
Yeah, they've had trouble with
this. This is such a game where play action, hit your tight ends in the flat, let them run with the ball after the catch. This is such a game for that concept. Will they do it? We'll see. Yeah. It's not the first time somebody sat here and called for it, but this is a game where that sort of game plan could serve them very well.
So the Lions actually did well off play action, but for the most part, the Bills have been really good play action defense. But I think the main reason why they've been so good is because a lot of play action, this is going to sound counterintuitive to everything that I've said all year, I admit that, but a lot of the play action concepts that teams run aim to attack the linebackers, and their linebackers are excellent in coverage, right? Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano is probably the best coverage duo at linebacker in the league. So what the Lions did was they ran a lot of those like 7-8 protect big drop play action against them, where they got those corners, Dane Jackson, you know, guy Xavier Rhodes, I don't think played in that game yet, but that he's going to play it tomorrow night. Like, those guys were on islands against Amon-Ra St. Brown a lot of the game.
Right.
And that's how they did it. So I think that those the play action concepts that we've actually seen them run a lot of, more with Bailey Zappi, but then a little bit with Mac over the last 2 weeks, I think those, ironically, because I've been saying ditch them, right?
Yeah.
I think those actually come back to in play. And I think the biggest reason why, to kind of my overarching point with the offense, is that just like the defense, you got to do something different, right? Like they know your bread and butter.
Teams are selling the run.
And teams are selling out to stop the run. They know you're going
to
try to run gap at them because that's what you did in the win game and were so successful with. You know that they know you're going to try to run gap at them, and they know that you want to throw the ball to in-breaking routes over the middle of the field, right? Like, they know that's your bread and butter. So last year, they played more man coverage than they usually do in that Week 16 game, and they played a lot of inside leverage, right? The corners were taking inside leverage instead of outside position to try to take away and cut off the middle of the field. So on top of the fact that, you know, having some compliments or having some tendency breakers to those types of things where, you know, maybe Jacoby Myers runs a 10-yard out instead of a 10-yard dig or something like that, I think that these bigger drop back, you know, bigger, you know, deeper play action plays that they've developed this year is something that Buffalo has not necessarily seen you do, right? Because you've always been so caught up in the second level play action plays. So I think that's a big part. This secondary for the Bills, and now that they don't have Von Miller, which I think is huge, this secondary for Buffalo is banged up. They are not the same secondary that they've been. That safety tandem is now broken, right? Because Micah Hyde's not playing. Jordan Poyer's been in and out of the lineup. Tre'Davious White's supposed to play more this week, but he's still coming back from that ACL, and they've had a lot of issues at the second outside cornerback spot. They've revolving door there. Dane Jackson, I mentioned, Ben Ford, who's now on injured reserve. Kair Elam, their first round pick, has kind of been a bust so far.
Yeah, he struggled.
So they are really struggling to find consistent play out of their CB2 spot. So those are the areas that I think you can attack this Bills defense. And without Von Miller, maybe you have some more time to do it.
I just have this lasting image from the game last year here where the Patriots are in that condensed formation. Nelson Agholor is out wide.
Yeah.
Everybody else is condensed. The Bills had one corner standing out with Nelson Agholor, and then they had 10 guys in the box.
Yeah.
They didn't have a deep safety. They weren't, you know, they were just waiting for it.
Yeah.
And I would expect the Bills to give the Patriots a similar look again until they prove they can beat it. So you have to prove you can beat that look. And I go back to play action. You're looking for the deep shots. To me, it's the tight ends. They've allowed the fifth most catches to tight ends in the league this year. You've got especially
I like the tight ends out of some of their spread
right.
looks. The play action.
Oh, you got to spread out.
The play action stuff worries me. Attacking Milano at Edmonds feels like you're attacking the strength.
So I'm not
right?
necessarily saying play action to attack those guys. I'm just saying they're expecting you to run. They're going to come out and expecting you to run. Maybe you can take advantage of that, but. Especially Jonnu Smith. You got a team that can't cover tight ends, that's bad at tackling after the catch.
Yeah.
That should scream Jonnu. And look, they have gotten them more involved the last 2 weeks. Jonnu had 6 touches against the Jets, and then Hunter Henry had the big game last week.
Right.
It's not close to what we were looking for coming into the season, but they are starting to get a little more involved here. So
I will say this, Alex. It's a good time to play the Bills. Like if you have, you're gonna have to play the Bills twice a year. You can't avoid playing Buffalo.
Nope.
It's a good time to play the Bills. They have some guys out, starting left tackle out, Von Miller out, Micah Hyde out for the year. Tre'Davious White still working his way back. Edmonds has been banged up a little bit. So if you're, this is as good of a situation to play Buffalo as you're gonna get. Other than Josh Allen not playing in the game, right?
I'll add that, and this is kind of my big point on the whole game.
Yes.
And then I know we're running long here. I have to get this one out. When I watched the Bills this year, and really going back to last year, I've texted you about this a lot.
Oh boy.
I think teams respect the Bills too much. Listen.
There we go.
I don't mean that the Bills are overrated or anything like that. When the Ravens used to come in here, right? See, I give this spiel. People say I'm hating on the Bills, and I compare them to the Patriots. Right.
Yeah. I think Judon's got a little bit out of
it. He talked about it. So the reason the Ravens were the one team that always gave the Patriots fits is they were the one team that consistently, when they played the Patriots, whatever, man, we're NFL players, they're NFL players. We'll figure we're going to do what we do because we believe in what we do, and we're going to trust ourselves. When the Patriots played Brady last year, Matthew Judon, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something to the effect of, yeah, he's Tom Brady, but he's human. He's an NFL quarterback. We faced NFL quarterbacks before, and they almost beat him. That doesn't mean take them lightly, but what it means is Patriots, I know people are down on them. They made the playoffs last year. They were over 500. These guys are in the NFL for a reason, right? Yeah.
Some of them. I'm just kidding.
I'm not saying run the same stuff they always, but don't reinvent the wheel. I see so many teams, they play the Bills and they diverge so extremely from what they usually do.
Right.
And they come up with these super intricate game plans. And it's like, all right, in theory, that's a nice idea. In theory, that will work, but you don't have the personnel to execute it. You're asking guys to do
different.
Things they can't do, right?
Got to do something different.
Do something different, but operate within your strength. Don't like, perfect example last year, Miles Bryant just wasn't fast enough to cover Isaiah McKenzie. I don't necessarily hate the coverage plan they had last year, but they didn't have the players to execute it. You can't just go reinventing the wheel because the Bills are this big scary offense. I think you at the end of the day, and this is about any matchup, you have to play to your strengths. If you don't play to your strengths, you're not going to win the game, regardless of who you are as a team, regardless of who you're playing. You know who does a great job of playing to their strengths? The Bills. They almost do it to the other extreme. Yeah. They almost do it to a fault. The wind game, they did not adjust because they said, we don't run the ball well. We have Josh Allen, so we're just going to throw because that's what we do well. I think so many teams
have ridiculous throws in that game.
So many teams get away from
right
their
through the wind.
So many teams get away from their identity against teams like the Bills, against teams like Patriots. Isn't just the Bills, the old Patriots.
Yep.
You see it against the Chiefs, although you see it a lot less now. And look at what's happening. The Chiefs are in some more rock fights. You can't get away from your identity in this game. You just can't do it because that's how the game will get away from you quicker than anything else.
Okay, so my two things I want to wrap this on three things. Two things, three things, whatever. One, number one, I need a Bill game plan out of this, right? Like, I need some old school, like, this is like, we're putting in Thurman Thomas in the Hall of Fame because Bill took him out of the Super Bowl. Like I need to
but
see
that's,
something
that's
like that.
But that's my point. Bill needs to get in the lab and be Bill.
Yes. That has to be, you are only going to win this game if after the game on Thursday night, early Friday morning, when you and I are in the press box, we're like, holy crap, that was a hell of a game plan by Bill, right? Like, that's the only way that they're going to win this game. Number two, I'm going to go back to my quarterback thing. The other way you're going to win this game is if Mac Jones makes some plays in the fourth quarter.
Sure.
Like, you're not going to avoid that. Like, you're not going to be up 2 scores in the fourth quarter. So the quarterback's going to have to make some plays in the fourth quarter as well. And if you can get those two things, and one of them, I mean, both of them kind of have eluded them a little bit here, especially more than before with Bill, I would say. If you can get those two things checked off, then I think that you have a good chance in this game. And the last thing I will say, and I'm going to preface this very carefully because I do not want them to purposely try to injure Josh Allen. That's not what
I'm
saying.
I didn't want to say it because I know the fault, but thank you.
Mack Wilson and Jabril Peppers, this is a message for both of you. If you have a chance to line him up, okay? Because everybody else that you see play against this guy doesn't want to do it.
So
they don't want to put their shoulder into him because he's 250 pounds and he's a beast. Okay, but I see those two guys lay out bigger
dudes.
Can I
add a third guy who I think would definitely respond to that message? Matthew Judon.
Yeah.
This goes back to my...
But he's important. So, I don't want to... Because what's going to happen is as soon as they lay him out, all the flags are going to get thrown in the air. And now all of Buffalo is going to want the guy ejected from the game.
You know what? It's 15 yards. Here's the thing. This goes back to the respect thing.
Yeah.
Players don't want to tackle Josh Allen. I don't know if it's because he's big or it's they don't want to be the guy
I don't want you to tackle him where he runs you over and then he's flexing on you and stuff. I don't want to see any flexes.
And I forget who it was who said it this week. It might have been Wise. Somebody said it.
Yeah.
When he runs the ball, you got to make him feel it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, not saying try to hurt him. No dirty plays. But
no.
This is a talking point. It's as long as quarterbacks have been scrambling, going back to Fran freaking Tarkington.
Otto Graham.
I know you hate going back, but this is
Sammy Ball.
Did he run? I think this is something we can agree on. That's an old school football talking point, and there aren't many of those. When the quarterback decides to become a runner,
yes,
you need to make him pay for it. You need to make him feel it.
Yes.
That it's as true now as it was in the days of slinging Sid Luckman.
Sid Luckman.
I think it was slinging Sammy Ball, but whatever. you know the point. You know the point I'm trying to make here. Would you disagree?
No,
do you disagree?
I watch their games all the time, and I watch Josh Allen. He runs over a defensive back, and then he's flexing on him. And
they
give
him a cup of tea and a blanket as they escort him out of bounds.
And that's how they get him all fired up. That's how he gets into the game, right?
Right.
That's how he gets his juices flowing. It's that hockey mentality where every team – when Pasta gets hit too hard, there's six Bruins that come to his defense, right? That's what they got to be able to do. And I think that goes to your point of not overhyping the Bills in your head,
right? Exactly.
Not getting too
caught
up in
that. That's a better way to say it than teams respect the Bills too much. But
there
I like the reaction when I say it.
All right. Well, we appreciate Marine Matt for hanging on for 25 extra minutes
on the pod
here today. And, Alex and I will be back next week, same time, same place, hopefully talking about how Bill Belichick did a great job of stopping Josh Allen and just slimming Sammy Barr or whatever.
Sammy Barr, Sid Luckman, Otto Graham.
Patriots.
They leave the pocket, hit him.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. Subscribe on Apple, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen. Like the show? Please rate and review us. Listener comments and ratings help keep us high in the podcast rankings so new listeners can find us. Be sure to check patriots.com for more news and more podcasts.